This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
There are changes in the international character of education. It is clear that the advanced state of capitalism that we're now in is invoking forms of trade, forms of communication, forms of exchange, which we've not seen previously.
It's about the world that we're preparing our young people to go into.
Migration of labour, migration of capital, ideas, markets changing, shifting because of these international pressures. Those are all now features of our economy and of our society. And education is changing.
We teach them how to learn. We don't teach them things. We inspire them to be lifelong learners.
While we accept like foreign cultures, we also value our own cultures.
In Switzerland, students don't pay for school. The company pays and the government pays. More and more countries are seeing the benefits of a dual-track education, namely an apprenticeship and a solid education in school.
Countries want to compare themselves in terms of education. I'm not convinced that governments are equipping people very well for the international world. We're measuring the wrong things. We don't have a clear idea of the end point.
Most of them are going to be working in contexts where they're going to have to work with people from other countries. They're going to be communicating. They're going to be travelling frequently. And that's going to be the world that they are in.
International education means to me equipping people wherever they are, whatever their background, to be full members of that international, interconnected, interdependent world.
It opens a gate to the whole new world and makes me meet new people, be more open-minded and be ready to explore.
This is not a competition between being an internationally minded person and being nationally minded. It's a question of being both.
And international education should always reflect the changing world.
And good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Downing College and the 7th Biennial Cambridge Assessment Conference. I'm Bennett Steinberg, Group Director of Public Affairs, and today's Director of Operations, bringing together the global contribution. A few housekeeping points first. We're not expecting a fire, so any alarm will be real. The fire bell sounds as a continuous bell or a siren. On hearing this, please leave via the nearest fire exit. They're there at the back and to the side. Don't attempt to use the lift or try and take your belongings with you. Stay calm and walk straight to the nearest exit and assemble in the sunken garden outside. On to the event itself. We have a number of distinguished speakers to hear and time for discussion, but it is a packed programme, so I give fair warning to everybody. All of our chairs in all of the sessions will be rigorous and will cut people off if they think they've made their point already, and that includes the speakers. Secondly, we are filming the day and broadcasting it on the web live. Please ignore the cameras, but if asked to speak, wait for a microphone to arrive in front of you and stand up so the cameras can see you. Then state your name, your institution, and the country or region on which you focus. Thirdly, I would encourage you to use your smartphone, tablet, or laptop in silent or vibrate mode only, please, to tweet, comment or submit questions via that medium, which will be picked up and fed into the discussion. The address is hashtag CAConf, found at cam_assessment. I am, however, going to ask all of our speakers to turn their phones off since they interfere with the hearing. Now, our events exist to provide a forum to debate key educational issues because assessment is part of the whole learning process. As an independent not-for-profit working in over 160 countries, we look at what works and balance the needs of the individual, the economy and society. Now today we're joined by experts both on the platform and in the room from countries as diverse as Azerbaijan, Bangladesh, Germany, the Netherlands, the Iberian Peninsula and Zambia. We will also be joined by practicing educationalists with their own expertise from different countries through the day via video conference. In fact, joining us now at around 11 o'clock their time is a group from Cairo, Egypt. Magda Mohiel-Din, Senior Schools Development Manager, Middle East and North Africa for our International Exam Board, will introduce us to our Egyptian conference delegates. Magda.
morning to you all. Shall I stand up? It's better. Can you see me better like this?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Magda Mohyeddin, Cambridge International Examination presented in the Middle East and North Africa. I have a group of lovely ladies and gentlemen here from Cairo who are very keen on talking about international education. They are principals from some of our local and international schools. I have also representatives from the three main universities in Egypt, Ain Shams University, Cairo University, and Helwan University. I've said some of the logistics before we've started, but that's all. I'm going to leave the mic, because this is what we've agreed, to our colleague, Dr. Omnia Kasabgi from the British School of Egypt, to give an overview of the international education in Egypt. Thank you.
Mrs. Magda Mohyeddin, thank you very much for inviting me to participate in this seminar on the interpretation, importance, and impact of international education. As an Egyptian educator, I will express my views, particularly as they relate to the Egyptian context. Egypt has the largest education system in the Middle East and North Africa, a system that is rapidly growing and developing to meet the needs of millions of pupils and millions of parents here in Egypt. And the government of Egypt is responsible for offering free education at all levels of the education system. This education system mainly comprises government and public schools, which implement the Egyptian education national curriculum taught through the medium of Arabic, with English or French or German as a foreign language. Now, throughout the last three decades, a parallel system of education started emerging in Egypt, namely international education. And currently, international education has become the system of choice among thousands of parents. Today, approximately 150,000 Egyptian pupils are enrolled in 150 international schools across Egypt. Schools offering British, American, French, and German curricula, and school leaving qualifications. All such international curricula are implemented according to protocols between the government of Egypt and relevant governments, the governments and accreditation bodies involved. And establishing an international school requires quite a lengthy process of licensing. This raises the question, why are Egyptian parents making this shift from public government education to costly international education? Today, as the world becomes increasingly interconnected, international education is recognized as a key driver of Egypt's future prosperity. Particularly in the areas of innovation, human capital development, and the labor market. And Egyptians are fully aware that international education in all its facets brings tremendous value to our nation, especially at the time when Egypt needs to educate highly qualified and skilled people who can take their place among the best and the brightest in the world. Can I sit down?
Yes, please.
The second benefit of international education is that it allows current and future generations of Egyptians to acquire a global perspective, therefore enabling them to become citizens of the world, and in light of Egypt's own development initiatives, providing Egyptian students with a global perspective is of strategic importance. I have spoken from a national perspective, in addition to which I must add another extremely important perspective of the two major stakeholders in the international education context in Egypt, namely the suppliers and the clients. By suppliers, I mean the investors who are motivated to establish, resource and finance international schools in the country. And by clients, I'm referring to the parents who are determined to enroll their children in those international schools, regardless of the cost. Which brings me to the question, what are the expectations of Egyptian stakeholders, namely the parents and the suppliers, the clients and the suppliers, as well as the community? What are their perceptions, and why does international education have such a strong appeal to them? International education in the Egyptian context is defined by stakeholders as the blend of quality management, a qualified body of teaching staff, and low pupil-teacher ratios that create a highly valuable educational experience, which focuses on international mindedness and the development of a global perspective, a philosophy that pupils carry with them for their entire lives. Accordingly, both parents and pupils regard international education as the primary means by which we, as a nation, will be able to bridge the cultural and linguistic divides between Egypt and the rest of the world.
Thank you, Magda, and thank you, Professor, and welcome, Egypt. Also joining us for the UK's morning session in the same time zone as Cairo is a group from Johannesburg. Mark Barber, Cambridge International's Senior Schools Development Manager for Sub-Saharan Africa, will introduce us to our South African conference delegates. Mark.
Good morning from Johannesburg, local time, 11 o'clock. I'm Mark Barber, Schools Development Manager at Sub-Saharan Africa, and Cambridge colleagues with me are John Fisher and Patty Borman, our Recognitions Manager. We are joined by 10 principals and heads of departments representing 8 independent schools from South Africa, primarily Johannesburg area, but also from further afield. Between them, they have many years' experience in offering international education, both in South Africa and overseas, and have been chosen today specifically for their wealth of knowledge in this field. Whilst all of them are now at schools offering Cambridge qualifications, it's worthy to note that some of these schools offer dual curriculums with Cambridge, and all of them have extensive experience of education in the South African context. Their schools deliver the curriculums using classroom-based learning, blended learning, and in one case, distance learning entirely. Furthermore, it is worthy to note that some offer Cambridge qualifications at advanced level only, and others through the stages, including Cambridge Primary for 5 to 11-year-olds. Between them, they exemplify the flexible approach that Cambridge allows schools when designing their curriculums. I asked our guests beforehand for their brief comments on an international education in a South African context, and their answers broadly raised the same points. And they were giving South Africans a perspective beyond their immediate and localised context, easy transferability and a coherent programme of education, increased sensitivity to other cultural perspectives, a greater understanding of the meaning global citizen, and a competitive edge in the access to higher education. Furthermore, our guest noted that international education can contribute to the development of future professionals with the skills needed in a developing economy, in that it attracts parents with professional skills to the country, particularly in the high-stake fields of banking, technology and engineering. And linked to that, having an independent education system in South Africa would put South Africa's economy properly in gear. However, areas that weren't so clear-cut included the importance of an awareness of local context, and thus international education shouldn't be seen as a threat or an enemy to local curricula. The schools offering an academic international curriculum need to have a purpose beyond that, in that offering awareness to the host country, career guidance, and financial assistance to those most disadvantaged. A common theme was the notion of giving back, seeking to better the lives of all, a weight of responsibility on those who benefit from the global perspective international education can give, to ensure that the host country benefits as much as the learner. This is particularly relevant in a region where economic exploitation is rampant and precious rights to national resources may be perceived to be sold for short-term financial gain. In South Africa, the academic year runs from January, so final exams are typically sat now, as opposed to June in the United Kingdom. Recognition of Cambridge qualifications in local universities was an early hurdle that we have successfully overcome, and the latest challenge was the release date of our results, which allowed candidates little time to secure the sought-after university places. I'm pleased to report that progress has been made in this regard. Affordability of an international education remains an issue, particularly if we are to address the prejudices of wealth still very raw in South Africa. Despite the best intentions of our schools, their sponsors and third parties as a whole, an exchange rate against the British pound that has declined by over 50% in the last 4 years, and the majority of the country's wealth being held by the minority, access to a qualitative, affordable international education will remain a challenge to us all. Thank you.
And thank you, Mark. And welcome to South Africa.
This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.